It's time for your weekly dose of movie news, reviews, and the occasional rumor. Here's your host, Todd Vandenberg, Lee Vowell, and Rob Steele. This is Cinema Savants. And coming up in this week's show, Clint Eastwood and other dinosaurs, Allison Mack and other things that really should not be related to sex, and the new Mad Max movie gets a title called The Long, Long Road to Court. Yeah, well, it might anyway. But first, we're going to start with some bad news, unfortunately. Troyer, who a lot of people know as Mini-Me from the Austin Powers movies, died yesterday, which is sad.
That is sad.
And I don't know if you guys have heard anything about this. I've heard that it could have been alcohol poisoning because he was hospitalized recently due to that. Do you guys know more than I do? That's the extent of what I know.
About this particular topic? No. That would be sad, although his death is sad regardless. Arlie Ermey, he passed on this week too. Also sad.
Armie Hammer? Really? That's horrible.
Armie Hammer, the heir to the huge, huge Mobil Oil conglomerate. Yeah, Arlie Ermey gone, which makes me sad because he was very fun to watch being angry.
You know, he from what I understand, Full Metal Jacket. We're talking about the same guy, right?
Yes. Not
totally. Okay. So, the director, can't remember his name. Help me out. Stanley Kubrick. Yes, Stanley Kubrick didn't know how to write for the Marines, so he just had him ad-lib that whole thing.
Yeah.
So he didn't know. It was like it worked out perfectly. And then he was actually really good, so it turns out. And really funny from what I understand in real life. So.
Yeah, Mississippi Burning is excellent in Mississippi Burning.
plays the fire, if I remember correctly.
And beautifully. Yeah, I mean, he's a very good actor. He was much more than, you know, basically playing what he had done for 20 years in the Marines. Actually, I don't think he'd been a drill sergeant that long, actually. But, yeah, he certainly had that down. But, yeah, he's an excellent actor, as was the more recent passer on to the realm beyond Vern Troyer.
Which is I'm just thinking, it wasn't Clint Eastwood, no, which is my segue to the next bit that kind of got messed up because someone said they were going to see a movie but didn't, and that's okay.
It's because I wasn't going to spend $15 on a movie that I knew would suck.
That would be 1517 to Paris.
Huh? That would be 1517 to Paris. And when it's available for it, then I'll blow $5 or $6 and be angry that
That's not a title that rolls off the tongue, though, is it?
No, it's not, which is okay because the titles don't have to be great. It helps, as the people who produced Edge of Tomorrow found out. It really helps to have a good title because people may actually want to see your movie if the title makes sense and doesn't sound so damn generic. But that has nothing to do with 1517 to Paris. And I've not watched it because I'm not going to spend that much money. And I do have MoviePass, and we'll talk about MoviePass later. So I could have watched it essentially for free, but it would have cost me 2 hours of my life. And I didn't want to spend that either. I'll eventually spend it on watching it. But it's the concept alone turned me off because, oh, here's another Eastwood loves the hero story, and Sully got good reviews. Basically, Sully I thought was really boring because Sully starts out as a hero in the film, and this has nothing to do with the actual person. They're just talking about the film, and he performs a heroic act, and he stands up heroically to the ensuing investigation, which is basically just BS manufactured to make it a drama because everyone knows what happened. It's such a damn boring film because we all know what happened. And if you don't know what happened, why would you want to go see the damn movie anyway? And you know that he's going to be
cleared. Watch the language. Watch the language.
Movie. So it's just, God, it was just I'm going to worship another hero. It's like, it's boring, dude. And so now he comes out with 1517 to Paris about three three members of our armed services who perform a heroic act by stopping a terrorist attack on a train to Paris, which is, okay, that's cool. Except he decided to use the three actual people who had no acting experience, and virtually every review I've read said, it kind of shows. It's like, why would you do that?
Aren't they the real people?
Yeah, they're the three real people who were in it.
I guess if he was trying to make it, did he make it like a documentary style kind of thing?
No, not really. Okay. Because it goes in the backgrounds and shows them as kids and where they're growing up as buddies and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, I mean, I guess he said, why not? Because then you can get, I mean, these are the guys who actually felt it, except the problem is apparently they can't actually convey how it felt. Because every review just talks about, they're amateurs. That probably wasn't the best idea. And it goes all the way back to Audie Murphy playing himself in the role, and I can't recall the title now, and someone will quickly look it up, I'm sure, but that happened in the 40s. And Audie Murphy was a huge hero in World War II and played himself. And, you know, he was an okay actor, but not so much. Eastwood has just gotten... He got into this really sentimental thing where sentiment was... practically all of his movies were about, which is cool in a lot of ways. Not what you would expect. I mean, Million Dollar Baby, that extremely sentimental film, and Letters from Iwo Jima. And it is about letters and home that people wrote home from Iwo Jima. And of course, that's actually from the Japanese side, which made it very different, which is cool. And The Hereafter was, examination of what it means to move on. And it was based on tsunami, but it was all about feelings, which is not what you would expect from Eastwood. And it's just, he's just getting, and now he's morphed into this weird, super gung-ho thing with American Sniper, which is, in a way, it's a good movie, and in another way, it's just, it's like, by God, America, right or wrong, and it's just, God, what the hell is wrong with you, dude?
Well, I'm waiting for him to come out with the biography on that chair he talked to.
I think that was his Waiting for Godot.
It's just, dude.
Gal Godot.
I
wish.
I mean, Gran Torino was excellent. And Hereafter was actually pretty good. But to me, he's just kind of lost it. He's just gotten into this thing of like, 15, 17. It's like, that's an interesting story, but really? You really think you need the people who are really in it to tell the story? It's like, why don't you go find gunslingers and redo Unforgiven? I mean, I'm sure you can find someone somewhere. It just, God, it's so bizarre that he's gotten into this. It's almost like he's retreating back into his childhood of a hero worship. And it's just kind of, to me, it's just kind of gross. And again, it has nothing to do with the actual people who actually did this and help prevent a terrorist attack. That's cool, but they don't need to be in the movie about it.
It doesn't sound like a good idea.
Well, if you've seen the previews, you can tell it's a bad idea because they suck in the trailer. How the hell are they going to be any good in a 2-hour movie or an hour and a half movie, however long it is? Just, I don't understand how you could watch the first dailies and think this was a good idea. And then just shelve it and then get real actors because it's not like it would have cost you much to cut them out of the picture. Bad, really bad decisions.
Well, how's this? Why don't we move on to a movie with real actors?
And a really good movie? That would be fun.
It was better than I was anticipating, despite the cast, which was incredible. Because Clint Eastwood, known for Westerns. And so what did I watch? I watched a Western called Silverado, which came out in 1985 because I had that time. And I want to start off by telling you, I don't like Westerns. I'm not a fan. It's not my thing. Gunfights in movies, right, are okay. Not in real life. Gunfights in real life are horrible. Don't do that.
They're bad.
But, watching them in movies are okay, but watching a gunfight in Westerns are just, they're slow and plodding, and it's single shot after single shot because automatic weapons don't exist. And that's one of the problems I had with this movie. There's also lots of horse chases, but they're different from car chases because I think the difference is in horse chases, you get a close-up of horse feet running on dirt, and you get the occasional tree going by, and you can't tell that there's any speed involved, as opposed to a car with spinning wheels and road lines blurring past, and look at all the buildings going by, as opposed to there's a tree.
If it's filmed, if it's filmed right, you can tell there's speed involved. But the difference is,
I have never seen a horse race or horse chase that just kind of went, look how fast they're going. They've all
unless it was an actual race like the Kentucky Derby. Yeah.
Even then, the Kentucky Derby looks kind of slow compared to any car chase in any movie ever.
Well, it is because they're not going 150 miles an hour on horses.
Exactly.
And usually no one's riding a donkey and the other guy's got secretariat. That usually doesn't happen either. So
that would be weird.
That would be awesome, though. Oh, my God. I want that right now.
Anyway, all that being said, Silverado, I thought, was a good movie. Run through the cast and the characters a bit. Kevin Kline, who is an awesome actor anyway, plays a guy named Payden, I think, who is a down-on-his-luck gunfighter, gambler, horse thief, dog lover guy. We never really get that much background on him, who meets up with Scott Glenn, who is, I think, a good actor. Scott Glenn's Emmett and Emmett's brother Jake, insert State Farm joke here, played by Kevin Costner, who I think was 12 in this movie.
Yes, he's very young.
Very weird. And then they also meet Danny Glover's racially abused Martin Riggs. Sorry, wrong movie. Mal. Now, he looks like Murtaugh, but he acts like Riggs in this movie. Seriously, with the whole PTSD thing, only it's from racism and not a war. And he's a sniper. So, hey, it's Riggs. What do you know? Anyway, together they eventually find a plot. That's what it was. They band together to save a small town called Silverado from Brian Dennehy, Ray Baker, and Jeff Goldblum. Because, yeah, these are names that you guys should know.
We do.
Lots of recognizable names. And of all the actors in this movie that I go, hey, I know him and him and I like them, the only character I liked was Danny Glover's.
I have a quick question and a quick comment.
Go ahead.
Kevin Costner was actually 30 when he made that movie.
He looked 12.
He does. It's like I figured he was maybe 22 or something. He was freaking 30. He does look like he's
still looks. He still looks.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. He's 63 and he looks like, oh, maybe he'll turn 50 in a couple years. But that's crazy. I really thought he was like 22 or 23 when he made that movie. And I'm gathering from this that this is the first time you've watched Silverado.
It is.
I am shocked, even though you don't like Westerns. Okay, continue.
Anyway, Kevin Costner, right? Played someone who was fun and lovable, but what killed me was the soundtrack. And I'm blaming Kevin Costner for this. Because the soundtrack in this movie is almost exactly the same as Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. That hit me about halfway through. I went, I've heard this music before, but I've never seen this. That's Robin Hood. What the hell? And, you know, it kind of fit. But at the same time, it kept pulling me out of the movie.
Can't be on him.
Anyway, despite its slow beginning and confusion about who you are and are not supposed to like in this movie, because Brian Dennehy keeps smiling and you think, he's a good guy, but he's doing bad things. Is he the bad guy of the I can't tell until close to the end. It's he's a good film, guy. Which I think it was fun, which I think is the point of the movie, and if the opportunity comes up to watch it, go for it. I would say watch it on Netflix, but as of October, it wasn't there anymore. Nor is it on Hulu, and you can rent it on Amazon Prime. But why? It'll be on TV again soon. I was amused, however, by a couple of goofs in the movie. And I'm not referring to the way Kevin Costner acted.
You're talking about that one vampire scene that didn't make any sense whatsoever.
Well, that too. Toward the end of the movie, in the background, there's a house with an American flag, as you would expect in the Wild West, except it is a 50-star American flag hanging from one of the houses. And I'm nice. Like, you know, this is the Old West. They didn't have 50 states back then. They're technically not even in a state now, but oops. And there's one other bit that I don't know if you guys remember because I know you've seen this movie before.
Many times.
And I don't know if you remember this bit. Toward the end, there's Jeff Fahey is sneaking down one wooden sidewalk like they had in the Old West movies. And in the Old West itself, I assume. And some other guy is sneaking down another one, and they're trying to go get... I forget. Who are they? Scott Glenn's character, I think. But they're sneaking down, and you hear the sound of feet on wood. You know, they're not sneaking very well. But then they cross the street. And when they cross the street is made of dirt. But there's still wooden sound effects of people walking on wood. But there's no one there to be walking on the wood.
Maybe there's other people.
No, the whole town's abandoned. The only two people in this entire town right now, outside, apparently, are these two guys walking on dirt. That sounds like wood.
Are you going to tell me that... The
Is that
scene
a Foley guy screwed up?
When actually it was the lawnmower man. It was Jeff Fahey. He screwed it up. When Jake steps out of, I can't remember if it was a saloon, but it was a building on a corner.
Yeah.
That alone doesn't make that movie enjoyable for you. That
oh,
scene alone.
I didn't say it wasn't enjoyable. I got extra amusement out of it.
Yeah, that goes beyond that makes up for the flag, and I can't believe you actually counted the stars in the flag.
I didn't count the stars, but they were not in that kind of a configuration before.
You counted the stars. You know you counted the stars. I think it's a really fun movie. We talked about this.
It was not that high definition.
Gosh, maybe a month ago or something, I was thinking this would be a fun movie if they just would do a sequel with the actors now and just what happened with those characters.
I will agree.
Oh yeah.
Because they're all around. And
as we just looked up, Brian Dennehy is still alive.
Yeah, they're all out there. Well, Brian, spoiler alert, Brian Dennehy might not be in the sequel. But it would be really fun to see those characters because I thought they were really interesting characters. I mean, there wasn't a lot of depth to them, but they did enough. They did enough to establish, oh, they're interesting. They're fun to watch. And it would be cool to see, you know, did Jake... Now that Jake is, I guess, in the movie, he would be in his 50s because, again, he looked like he was 12. Has he settled down or is he still just such a goofball? Because he was. He's a goofball in that movie. He was a deadly shot goofball.
Or does Jake work for State Farm?
Yeah, does Jake work for State Farm? It'd be cool. It would be a fun movie to do. And, you know, because we were talking about how they reboot and relaunch and do all this crap with movies. So that would be a fun thing, I think. It would be really cool because they're all very enjoyable actors. And it was a cool storyline. It would be cool to see what happened 30 years later from Silverado, and see where they went.
The soundtrack could be from Queens of the Stone Age.
As long as it's not from Bodyguard.
Silverado poster.
Yeah.
Starring. Okay, here's the original poster. Starring Kevin Kline, Scott Glenn, Rosanna Arquette, John Cleese. Kevin Costner is on the second line down, so I don't think he probably had the pull to tell Lawrence Kasdan, hey, this is what you ought to do for the... just a weird thing.
John Cleese needed a bigger part.
Agreed.
I, that's one of the things I saw when I saw this movie was, John Cleese is in this. All right, fine, I'll watch it. And
Jeff Goldblum.
He was in it for like, what, 10, yeah. 5, maybe 10 minutes at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, he was the councilman with the silly walk. Yeah, I mean, it'd be awesome if like Quentin Tarantino directed the silly
walk. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. yeah, that would be pretty weird.
So speaking of unnecessarily violent movies...
There's no unnecessarily violent movie when it comes to Quentin Tarantino. The violence is very necessary, sir.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, it would be fun.
I was going to go over to another movie that came out about the same time. Well, the original came out about the same time as Silverado. The Mad Max movie.
Oh, I thought you were going to say E.T. Yes.
Which is similar because, yeah, E.T. had so much violence in it.
Tons.
Mad Max Fury chases. Road.
Bike chases were so fast, and you just couldn't tell. The speed was amazing. Anyway, yes, Mad Max, Furiosa.
Whenever
Sorry.
He said, ouch, he was actually hurting one of the cameramen off screen. It was a laser. Anyway, Mad Max, they want to do a sequel to Fury Road, which in and of itself was a sequel to, what, Beyond Thunderdome. Anyway, there's a company called... Kennedy Miller Mitchell, because all of the stuff in today's show just rolls naturally off the tongue. They're claiming that they are contractually owed $7 million more for the production of Fury Road. And Warner's claimed, no, you guys just spent all this money. And so they're going to court, which is tying up the Mad Max sequel. Now, you guys liked Fury Road, right?
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. I just watched it and went, boy, it just kind of, it did nothing for me.
Well, you're also the guy who waited 33 years to watch Silverado, so, you know.
Well, that's true. So what, 30 years from now, I'll watch Fury Road and go, oh, I get it now. No, I'm not.
No, you won't.
No.
Which, thank God, that's why movies affect people differently. It would be bad if everybody loved that movie. Everybody loved every movie. That would be a boring place to live.
I mean, I didn't hate Fury Road. It just kind of went, oh.
You can feel free to hate it if you want. That's fine.
I just didn't get it. It makes you a lesser person,
but...
I just didn't understand, I think, all the Oscar stuff that went along with it. Because I've seen movies that are so much better than Fury Road that just got blown off by everybody.
Oscars are just weird. Always.
Always. Speaking of weird and Oscars, because this guy was nominated for an Oscar, I think. Eddie Murphy? Eddie Murphy was nominated at some point.
He was.
Was he nominated for...
The Dreamgirls, I believe.
Yes, Dreamgirls.
Yeah. Not Boomerang, no.
He was not nominated.
Although, it's Oscar-worthy, I think, in my personal opinion. Fine film.
Well, you'll enjoy the TV series then, because BET has ordered 5 scripted new series, and one of them is a Boomerang TV series, which is going to confuse a lot of people who like to watch old cartoons.
I thought when I saw your agenda, I thought, what? Wait, what?
Yeah, it threw me off. Well, the headline that came with this was TV News, Boomerang. And I went, what's wrong with the old cartoon channel? No, it's Eddie Murphy's movie that's getting turned into a TV series that will have neither Eddie Murphy nor Halle Berry.
Huh.
Any thoughts?
Is he producing it or something?
It does not say in this article.
That's weird.
Charlie Murphy in it, maybe?
Dale Murphy.
Probably not Dale Murphy.
Dale Murphy on BET.
Dale Murphy. That would be... yeah.
Dale Murphy. Wally Joyner. It's just this, the Mormon part of BET.
Wow. Okay, yeah. Moving on to Mission Impossible.
It's the Caucasian Power Hour on BET.
I don't know if you guys saw this or not. This is... Remember that movie that we talked about in... What was it? It was March, and they said they're trying to make it come out in June, and we thought that's really a quick turnaround. Mm-hmm. But it was for a low-budget movie. This is Mission Impossible, movie 6 in the enormous series. And it's coming out on July 27th of this year. That's what, 2-3 months from now, right? They just now gave it over to have the musical score set up. Just now?
Who's doing it, though?
Lorne... Balf. Oh. I'm probably mispronouncing that. Lauren, I got right. B-A-L-F-E. Balf? Balfe? Balfa? Basky. The guy from
Ralph Bakshi. That'd be awesome.
I think I need more information, because it's like how many sets are actually set, how much the music is added late. Plus, it's Mission Impossible, so the music is not that important. And if it's somebody who's used to... Well, yeah, exactly. And if it's somebody who's used to writing scores, I mean, how long does it really take them?
If it was Howard Shore, it'd be like a weekend project. Or right. Danny Elfman. Either one.
John Williams or somebody. I mean, you know.
You crank it out.
Yeah.
Hans Zimmer, I think, would take, like... He probably started working on it 6 years ago, you know, in his head. I think he would take a while. Just strikes me as that kind of... I'm not talking about the... quality of their work. It's just, I don't know, just seems that Howard Shore is cranking these things out, like every time you turn around, oh, Howard Shore did it. It's like weird.
So is Pauly Shore.
Pauly Shore is scoring the film. Very pleasant.
Wow.
I'm sure.
So, in what is absolutely not going to be any kind of a segue, except that we talked about it last week a bit, Lost in Space started on Netflix, which goes with Mission Impossible. They're from the same time period, originally. Have you guys been watching Lost in Space?
I have not.
I have seen, I think, 4 episodes now.
I've started watching it with my daughter. Well, one of them anyway. We're 8 episodes in, and I have yet to actually like any of the characters. I like the story, which is why we're watching this. But all of the characters are not terribly likable. Is that just me?
It's not just you. I don't go as far as you are. I don't think they're. I wouldn't say a lot of them are unlikable, but there's not much to draw me in.
Trying to figure out where I recognize the robot from.
From virtually every other science fiction film of the last 50 years. The robot design sucks. I hate the robot design. The only thing I like about it is the face, and they stole that from Scrooged. Oh, let's use a video monitor for a face. I mean, basically, it's what it is.
I haven't seen the series, the new series, anyway, yet. But, I mean, I'm not sure if the characters, how likable they're supposed to be. I mean, I love It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but the characters aren't likable because they're not really supposed to be likable people. So I wasn't sure.
Yeah, but they're interesting, which is, that's the thing.
That's different.
Okay. So interesting so it's not that they're just not likable. They're not interesting as well on Lost in Space?
I don't care. The mom, whose name has escaped me for the moment.
Maureen.
Thank you.
Same as the original.
I know. Do not like her. And that's not a sexist thing. There's just there's enough about her that makes you go, there's something about her that I'm not supposed to like.
They've updated it a lot, and I appreciate a lot of the things they've done. Like, Maureen is not a housewife, which is all she was in the original. Now she's an engineer, which is cool. She has kind of a brittle edge to her, I think, and that's deliberate. The dad was a not-at-home dad kind of thing, because he's always off on some kind of a mission, which really, that's really just kind of expanding what the original was.
Yeah.
Because the dad was this really stern, ultra, not really kind of their dad. And, I mean, that was really subtle in the original, because you couldn't really do that in the 60s. For what was essentially a kid's show. And now they've really brought that to the forefront. So I appreciate they've done that in a way, but it does make them a little less likable. I don't really care what happens to any of the characters, which is the biggest problem to me, because you should be invested in the characters, except for Dr. Smith. I love what they're doing with Dr. Smith.
Weird what they're doing with Dr. Smith.
It is very weird. It is very weird. I mean, and I'm not talking about the gender swap, and I don't think that's what you're talking about either.
No.
Yeah.
Dr. Smith was basically a woman in the first series anyway.
Yeah.
I don't mean that as derogatorily as it sounded.
No. I mean, it's just, that's kind of, they've just basically completed the gender swap by actually casting an actress instead of an actor. But yeah, that's kind of how Dr. Smith acted. But Dr. Smith has a much, much darker edge. And you're further along in the series than I am, so I can only imagine where it goes. But I was talking to my daughter about this last night and said, Dr. Smith, I really like Dr. Smith because Dr. Smith is the kind of character that if she wants an extra graham cracker on Tuesday, she will willingly kill 5 people today and not even blink.
Yeah.
But if saving 5 lives today gets her an extra graham cracker Tuesday, she'll do that too. It's just, she doesn't care about anything or anybody except herself, which is, that's what the first Dr. Smith was. But I mean, they've just like blown it, not way out of proportion, but they've just absolutely blown it up. So I think she's a fascinating character because every episode is like, oh my God, she did that. What the hell?
Well, yeah, you spend a lot of time going, oh, what is she doing? Oh, really? Doing that? Ooh.
But she's the only reason I'm watching the show. And it's weird because it's not like they really have a lot to live up to, because the original was so goofy and intentionally stupid, and it got more and more that way as Smith's character got more and more popular. The actor, and I blanked out on the guy who originally played Robinson in the original series, he was notably angry because he was supposed to be the star of the show, and then it turned out to be the guy playing Smith, and he was upset that he was getting all the fan mail and blah blah blah, which is like, dude, you're on a hit show, who cares why? But I guess since he used to be Zorro, his ego couldn't take it, which is whatever. Like I said, the only reason I'm going to keep watching it is to see what happens with the Smith character, because where I'm at, there are still little bombs that have been planted that haven't gone off yet, which I don't know if they have by episode 8 or not, but I'm looking forward to see that. But
I'm going to give you a spoiler.
Yeah, go ahead. She dies in episode 7.
No, she's still very much, although someone does die. I'm not going to tell you which one.
Woo! I like it.
Just a little thing, a tie back to the original series.
Oh, nice.
Dr. Smith, the actual Dr. Smith, and that's going to make sense when you see the series. They find out that Dr. Smith is not who she says she is, and have an identity card to prove, hey, this is what Dr. Smith looks like. And the picture on the card is of Bill Mummy.
That's
who played Will Robinson in the original series.
That's funny. I like that.
Wonderful tie-in. Give you a little something from the original series too.
I was gonna say, pretty sure it wasn't gonna be the guy who played Dr. Smith, because he died.
Jonathan Harris.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that long ago that he died. I looked that up recently. Anyway, moving on from Lost in Space to something that. Well, let's see. It originally came out in the 60s. 20 years before that would be the 40s, which would be World War II, which is when Spielberg is going to jump in and direct a DC movie. I'm pushing the segues, but you know what? It'll work. Spielberg has said he's going to direct a DC movie based on the Black Hawks, which was set quite firmly in World War II.
No. That's not what the headline. Every headline I've read said he's going to direct Black Hawk.
Black Hawks,
which is actually the comic title is Black Hawks, Black Hawk.
I'm wondering if anybody, DC's already screwed it up again.
Oh my God, no kidding. When I read this, I said, oh my God, we got to talk about this. And when I saw it on the agenda, it's like, yes, this is like early Christmas. It's like, okay, let's take the most successful director of all time, based on box office, because he went over $10 billion.
And he's a good director. I mean,
and he's an excellent director. Yeah. But I'm just talking about, just from the commercial aspect alone, because DC needs a hit, because they've had some movies that haven't performed the way they should have. Let's just put it that way. They could use a critical hit, too. So it was like, oh, my God, who is the perfect? Let's see. Let's find an excellent director, a guy who should win an Oscar, like probably every other movie he directs. A guy who will definitely make box office. He's the perfect director for, you know, what you want as a launch pole. So let's give him Black Hawks, which, I mean, I know about the Black Hawks, but
I only know about them from Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, the TV series. I don't go that far back with my comics.
I looked at two different websites, which are crowdsourced. This is not just someone like me or Rob or Lee saying, oh, these are the best DC heroes. These were crowdsourced. One went up to 121 characters. Blackhawks do not appear. One went up to 162. Blackhawks do not appear. Okay, so you're going to get the perfect director. The perfect director for your property.
For everything.
Yeah, for everything, but especially for this kind of a thing. And you're going to give him at least the 162nd most popular property that you own, which really doesn't even have superheroes in it, because they weren't superheroes. They were pilots.
No.
They were the Howling Commandos, except they weren't very interesting, and they didn't have Nick Fury leading them, and they didn't pal around with Captain America. I mean, Jesus, could you possibly pick a more stupid property? Yeah, he can make it a box office success because he's Spielberg, and he might make a great movie because he's Spielberg. And I'm sure they're thinking, well, you know, he does World War II. That'd be cool. Let's have him do it. Maybe you could give him something that needs a good director. Like, maybe have him do Green Lantern Corps. It's not like you haven't just shelved your other properties. Just, like, give him whatever the hell he wants. Just stop whatever ungodly abortion you're going to do with the next Justice League movie and have Spielberg do it. I mean, why on earth would you get the top line director and give him the worst possible property you could give him? Seriously. You have the opportunity to have this guy make $1.5 billion for you worldwide, and you're giving him a property that it's like, if you pull $300 million, it'll be a success. God, that is stupid. And it could easily be a great movie. And I'd be kind of shocked if it wasn't. But you are in business to make money, right? And so you get like the most obscure freaking property you've got. And you can't even get the damn title right. It's not Black Hawk. Oh my God.
Can I interject here? So
please, I'm done.
About the title. The main character is Black Hawk, right?
No.
Fictional character.
There's not a character. I keep seeing where it's led by a man named Black Hawk, and yet it wasn't. I mean, it was. I've forgotten his name. It's like Steve Martin, or I don't know.
I don't know. So there's the Black Hawk Squadron. Okay.
Right.
So maybe. And this may sound stupid, but maybe they're calling it Black Hawk based on Black Hawk Squadron, just calling it Black Hawk, and not to confuse it with the Black Hawks. Like, he's put some documentary together of Jonathan Taves and Patrick Kane, and it's, you know, maybe that's...
Okay, apparently there was a Black Hawk character. Not the point.
Looks like Boog Powell was actually the creator. No, I'm just kidding. Bob Powell. Boog Powell would be awesome.
You know that there are 3 Boog Powells in the history of Major League Baseball, yeah, and none of them are related?
Yep. Well, yeah. Yeah.
How?
Came across that recently and thought I'd throw it out.
The one who currently plays just calls himself Boog because of Boog Powell.
So. Ah. Good for him.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, okay, so there is a character named Black Hawk. Not the point. It was the Black Hawks.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. Maybe they're just... For better, they're not calling it the Blackhawks to confuse it. Some stupid people out there thinking, oh, it's a hockey team. They're calling it Blackhawk because whatever. I'm just playing devil's advocate. I mean, maybe there's a reason for it. So okay. I'll also see where it looks like Spielberg isn't necessarily, I mean, he's not 100% attached to it, from what I understand. There's still a chance he may not.
Yeah, he says his next movie is still going to be Indiana Jones 5 and the tricky patch of ice outside the post office. I stole that joke, but you know what? It still works.
It absolutely works. Oh, I would watch that.
Well, you know, even if he does make this, it is not going to kill off the giant that is Steven Spielberg.
No, it won't. But
as opposed to the giants that were killed in the movie you watched this week?
There were giants.
There was a segue. There was a
there were giants killed off in a movie I watched this week, which was called I Kill Giants.
What a concept.
Another coming-of-age movie. And this is a weird trend. We were talking about this last week with the movie Borg vs. McEnroe. It's like a movie that's released, except it isn't. And apparently it's released like at 12 screens. And then, we'll hold it back for 6 months. And maybe we'll release it. Maybe we won't. It's just, there's a very weird trend going on here. Anyway, this is a very good film. If you've seen A Monster Calls, you are familiar with the plot. Not that it's a ripoff or anything, but it's a similar thing where a child is going through a crisis, like 12-year-old kid, and a monster is involved. In A Monster Calls, it was a little more, not really sure what was going on with the monster. I Kill Giants, he can probably figure out what the role of the giants are. They're not friendly giants. It's not the BFG. So this child is going through this crisis, and you don't know what the crisis is other than the fact that, well, there's a giant going to attack her little village, and she has to kill the giant. And she has all these elaborate traps that are built so that she can kill the giant. And she has no friends because she's so weird, because she's talking about killing giants. She makes one friend, and they have a very tempestuous, difficult relationship because her friend is crazy and talks about killing giants. Zoe Saldana plays a school counselor who tries to help this girl from not being crazy and constantly talking about killing giants. And it's a really, other than, I don't really want to go into the plot, and there's not a whole lot to the plot other than this girl wants to, is bound and determined to kill this giant who's going to attack her town. And if she destroys this giant, there's going to be another one later because there are always giants to face. It doesn't really leave it up to you whether or not there really are giants, although maybe it does. It's definitely worth watching, though, because the actress who plays Barbara, extremely good, and she is Madison Wolf, and you will see a lot of Madison Wolf in the future. I don't know how old she is. I'm guessing probably 15 or 16 in actuality, but she'll be in a lot of movies moving forward because she's excellent in this role of this really conflicted young girl. And you do find out. There you go. And you do find out towards the end of the movie what her real crisis is, what's really going on. But it's still just a really, really good film. The CGI is really well done. It doesn't look like they spent $100 million on the film at all. But the giants look good. There are a few other creatures in the film that look really good. It's just a really well done film about how kids deal with issues in their lives. Good stuff. Very good stuff. Highly recommended. But it is really weird that it's like, is it at the movies or not? I don't know. Because it was supposed to come out last year. Weird.
IMDb, I Kill Giants 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Rotten Tomatoes, I Kill Giants 2018.
Yep.
Because
kind of weird.
People know how to count.
Because it's hard to tell when these movies are released in some cases, like Borg versus McEnroe, which I think is just coming out at theaters now. Just weird because it's a 2017 release. So, yeah.
Very timely things. And let's see, time traveling. No, not time traveling. Going back in time, though. I watched a movie that had to do with giants this week as well.
Woo!
Only it was just singular, and his name was Andre. HBO put out a documentary on Andre the Giant, the professional wrestler back in the 70s and 80s, which, for the most part, I mean, I did not know Andre's history completely, but this was actually a really good movie that told a lot of stuff about, actually, the whole wrestling business, really. Just focusing on Andre, who I didn't realize was that integral to the whole thing. But I did have a problem with this movie in that about halfway through, it stops being the Andre the Giant movie and becomes the Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan movie.
Ooh, gross.
And I thought, I understand how they were really tied in to what Andre did in wrestling. And yet, let's stop focusing on them because their name is not in the title of the movie. I don't care if Vince put the movie together or not. We need to stop interviewing him and focus more on Andre, what he did, but they didn't. It's still worth watching. It's a documentary about a guy who's died, so it's not going to have a happy ending. I went in knowing that. I just didn't, you know, kind of like Titanic. I did not see Titanic because I knew it wouldn't end well. I knew Andre was not going to end well. He died way too young. But it's worth watching because he did a lot more stuff than I had anticipated him doing. He was responsible, or at least partially responsible, for uniting all the divisions of wrestling into one unified, unfortunately, WWE. But just how much he controlled things like in the locker room. Like, if he was wrestling, if anyone who was not a wrestler walked into the locker room, he would tell them to get out.
I imagine they would, too.
Oh, yeah, there was one guy who wandered in, but I work with it. Get out. Okay. Off he goes. But it's worth watching. It's on HBO, so it's...
And if you have Xfinity, Xfinity has a free weekend, so good time, good time to catch it.
Oh, yeah. Time to catch Actually, it. I have HBO. I always forget because I'm hardly ever watching TV. So
I do want to throw in one thing about McMahon. It's like, in a way, he made wrestling what it is today. But
at the same time.
And at the same time, he made wrestling what it is today. He is everything that's wrong with wrestling because he's got to insert himself into everything. It's like And I can't watch wrestling anymore, not WWE, because it's so infected with his crap and his kids' crap.
That's just it. I don't watch the WWE. I will occasionally watch Impact. I watch ROH.
Yeah.
I will watch Lucha Underground. I don't watch the WWE.
Lucha Underground, which is awesome. But McMahon is just it was good with the Steve Austin era because you had a reason to root for the bad guy because he hated his boss. That worked. Once that was done, Vince needed to go away, and he wouldn't, and his kids won't, and it's just, oh my God, it's awful. So I'm not surprised that they screwed up a part, at least, of the Andre show. That's sad. Very, very sad. Yeah. But I'll still watch it, and once they pop up, then I can turn the damn thing off. Because like you said, I know what happens at the end, so.
Yeah. I saw a movie that everybody's seen, but I haven't seen it in a thousand years.
Movie,
called,
movie.
Corey Feldman flick, actually, because we talked about it 2 weeks ago. No, I watched watched Lost Boys, and while, you know, revisiting the film and just how some of it was really cheesy, of course, because at the time it was supposed to be a little cheesy.
Yeah.
And, you know, the special effects are like, you know, oh, he's drank the blood, and now he's going through a cloud and blah, blah, blah. I'd forgotten just how freaking awesome Kiefer Sutherland actually is in that movie.
He is.
And so if anybody hasn't seen Lost Boys, if anybody's younger and wants to watch that, they did make a second called The Tribe. I haven't seen the second or third one.
They've made like five now.
Have they made five? I knew one was called The Tribe. One was called whatever.
The Found Boys.
Yeah, but I mean, you could watch the movie just for Kiefer Sutherland alone.
The Pet Shop Boys.
Oh, yeah.
You're right. He's phenomenal in that movie. And it's been a while since I've seen it. But yeah, he's phenomenal in that. Like, also in Stand By Me. He's awesome in that movie.
He's the same character, really, as the
person. He kind of is the same character. Same person. Yeah.
But yeah, actually, I mean, it's a great character he plays. But you know, the thing I like about Sutherland is that he kind of morphed into, you can also like him as a good guy. He doesn't always have to be a bad guy. So, you know, he's not Donald, he's not his dad, but I appreciate Kiefer Sutherland.
I actually liked his Three Musketeers movie.
I didn't see that.
No, it was him and Charlie Sheen and Orlando Platt. Oliver Platt.
That's Porthos.
Oliver Platt.
As the fat musketeer.
Yeah.
That's right.
What is his...
Curry as Cardinal Richelieu. So it was fun.
What is the TV show that he's the star of now? The last...
24?
No. He's got a new show. He's like the last surviving cabinet member, so now he's the president. And he was just some guy that got thrown in as in the cabinet role who wasn't even supposed to be worthy of that. And now he's the president because of a bunch of us. He's
designated survivor.
Designated survivor, thanks. And I've watched like five or six episodes of it, and I liked it, but it's just there's only so much time. Like you were saying, Lee, it's like, who has time for all this stuff? But he's awesome in that. Talking about playing the good guy, he is not Jack Bauer in this at all, that's the whole point of it. You know, he's just some guy who shouldn't have been in the cabinet, and now he's the president, and he's got all this insane things thrown on him. He's so good in that. It is really, really good. It's really cool to see. he's a lot different from his dad, but I think he's just as good an actor as his dad. And they
you
are.
Think so? You think he's as good as Donald? I mean, Donald does.
I think he's getting there. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Because yeah,
I feel like
Sutherland's
Donald brings
awesome.
Yeah, Donald brings a little bit more.
He's got kind of
a gray area of humor that I don't know if Kiefer has really mastered as well as Donald did. But
But yeah, I mean, even talking about 24, I mean,
but Kiefer's,
can you imagine,
like,
that role without Kiefer Sutherland?
Yeah, Kiefer's got like what, 20 or 30 years to catch up to where his dad's at now. I mean, I think maybe at that same point in their careers, like I said, they're different. And he doesn't have the humor, or he hasn't had a role, but maybe put it that way, where he hasn't
played Hawkeye.
Yeah, where he's been able to show that. But I mean, it's pretty cool. It's got to be really gratifying. And I have no idea what the relationship is like. Hopefully they have a really good relationship. But I would think it'd be really cool to be, I mean, a hell of a successful actor. And like Sutherland, like dad. And to see your son do this well. I mean, it's because he's an excellent, excellent actor. And it's just fun to see that.
I think he has the sense of humor. Just on this one quote that I just found from Kiefer Sutherland, which is, there are two things that Jack Bauer never does. Show mercy and go to the bathroom.
that's awesome.
You know, if you watch 24, yeah, you know what?
That's yep. Both very true. Very true.
Moving on to other things from about that same time period. I was thrown off this week by a headline. I'm going to tell you the story first, which is that Yoda, because that goes with Donald Sutherland, is supposed to be showing up in the next Star Wars movie. And Spock is supposed to be showing up at some point during the next season of Star Trek Discovery. Now, the headline that I got said, Spock and Yoda to appear on screens again. And I thought, together? How did that? And all I could come up with was Pepsi buying the rights and putting them in a commercial together.
That would be fun. That would be expensive.
I wouldn't buy Pepsi, but I'd watch the commercial.
I would watch a movie with Spock and Yoda just rapping for like 2 hours. That would be fun. I would love to hear that discussion.
Did you ever see the... Which movie was it? It was one of the prequel DVDs had an extra of Yoda breakdancing with some stormtroopers.
I missed that one.
I would like to be making that up, and yet I'm not. It's probably on YouTube somewhere. Anyway, so speaking of the Pepsi tie-in thing, there's a product that started coming out this week based on the TV show The Handmaid's Tale. And I'd like to be making this up. There's a company called Lunaya, and I'm probably mispronouncing that, and I don't care. They're making lingerie based on The Handmaid's Tale.
I saw that. And I was like,
does that not sound wrong?
Are we missing the point here? That seems a little odd.
It sounds wrong, but it almost sounds like it's a natural thing. I mean, there's a lot of fetishes out there, and I can see that happening.
In other words,
record not one of my fetishes.
Especially not only. You purchased it. Coming. You know.
But no. But I can see that. Yeah. I mean,
it hidden under the twin bed.
Twin bed. There ain't no clothes, yo. So just joking.
Wow.
It's a joke. The record. Both of those jokes.
Covering your ass, that's okay.
Well, somebody had to.
Because there's no clothes involved. All right.
Oh,
so,
my God. I had to turn off my mic. I had a coughing fit from laughing. Damn you. I damn thee, Lee, and your Kiefer Sutherland humor.
That's right.
Okay, so going from lingerie that shouldn't exist to something else that shouldn't exist. Allison Mack.
Yeah.
Who starred in Smallville, which is something I'll admit I never watched, was arrested this week as part of a pyramid scheme sex slave cult organization, an organization called Nexium, only they really, really spell it wrong. I'm glad there was a pronouncer for this in the news article, because they spell it NXIVM. Pronounce it Nexium. No, you don't. That's and I'm making fun of that, but you know, that's, I think, the extent of the jokes we can make about this.
They're ancient Romans. That's what they're doing.
Ah, that's what. So. 9/14.
A friend of mine posted on Facebook how disappointed and sad she was about this, which, and I'm not making fun of the fact she was sad or disappointed about this, but that's the danger of looking at someone in the public eye, like actors or sports figures or whoever, and investing in them personally. Like, you probably shouldn't do that because you don't know what they're like. Appreciate their work. Like, I still appreciate Woody Allen's work on screen, but it's really hard to even watch a Woody Allen movie for me now, knowing what's going on or has gone on in the past. And it's sad. I'm sad for my friend because, I mean, she's really upset about this. And I'm sure a lot of people are really upset about it. But that's one thing you should try to keep in mind, is like, wow, that was really good. I know nothing about that person, so I'm not going to be really invested in how cool this person is. Very hard to do that, but it's probably beneficial that you don't hold people up, put them up on a pedestal and think how wonderful they are because you like them in a movie or your TV show or on the baseball diamond.
Because you never know.
No.
It's sad.
Yeah, and it's a sad, I mean, the story, of course, itself, of course, is sad. But yeah. The only reason it's affecting a lot of people is because she and a lot of these other people are well known. I mean, if this had just been Allison Mack, you know, average person who's a college student or whatever, you know, would have
grocery store attendant in Boise, Idaho.
Yeah, it wouldn't be as big, and it would be in the news, but it wouldn't be nearly as big as it is.
It wouldn't have been a headline. It would have been, you know,
it's a weird freaking story, that's for sure.
Yeah. Let's see. Other somewhat depressing news.
Yay!
More recently movie-related, MoviePass is in the news again this week. And this does not bode well for MoviePass. Their stock is, 6 months ago it traded at $32.90 a share. Thursday it ended at $2.55. They've changed. It's no longer. Todd's will still work, that you can see a movie a day. If you get it now, it's 4 films a month.
Mm-hmm. Which.
Still a good deal.
Yeah, still a really good deal. And it's weird because we were talking about it before. We talk about it, it seems like, every month, every week, that there's just these constant stories about the death of MoviePass or how it can't work and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, right now, of course, it's not as good as a deal, but you should have bought it when it was $10 a month for 30 movies. But it's like the most I've ever seen in a month.
What is it now? I can't remember.
Their current deal is you get iHeartRadio along with MoviePass, so you get the premium version of iHeartRadio, and I think it's $15 a month, and you get 4 movies a month, which is still a really good deal. It's not nearly as good as it used to be, but. Like I said,
if you go see 2 movies a month, you've made your money
exactly.
back.
Exactly. You know, the most I've ever seen in a month is 5. And I'm surprised I had time to do that.
Well, my friend, Twinbed, I mean, she used to go to a movie, gosh, probably saw 15 movies a month based on her movie pass. But now she wouldn't be able to do that. That's interesting. Didn't know it changed.
Yeah, it's a special promotion and doesn't mean that they won't change back because they've done, although this is the first time they've dropped it. From a movie a day, and that could be moving forward, and it could be when, you know, they'll have some notice come out because they're very adamant about rules may change, blah 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 blah. So on a month-to-month basis, it could certainly change. And frankly, I would be okay if they go to 4 movies a month instead of 30, because I don't use 30, and I've only used 4 once. So that would be all right. I don't really feel like, oh my God, you're destroying the program. I mean, because I'm sure if they do that, there will be 50,000 articles screaming about how they're ripping people off. It's like, no, you're paying $10 a month and you're seeing 4 movies. They are not ripping you off. It's just.
Well, this article says they're burning through about $20 million a month.
Right. Which. Is not a good business model, obviously, but there have been businesses in the past that have burned through a lot of money early and then managed. The trick is, can they hold on long enough for their actual profit center to start paying off?
Twitter.
Twitter. It's like, I mean, this is like Zuckerberg testifying before Congress. It's like, well, you don't charge for your service. How do you make money? And I love the look on Zuckerberg's face. Not saying Zuckerberg's a great guy or anything, but the look on his face when he's Senator, we sell ads, and he has this subtle smile on his face, like, what fucking century am I in? It's like, dude, have you not heard of ad revenue? It's amazing. I just love it. It's like, you do know Google doesn't charge you for every search you make, right? I mean, you know, it's just such an absolute ignorance of how these things work. It's just amazing. Yeah, if MoviePass can hang on long enough, I hope they do, because I like it, because it's great. Yeah. I don't understand why anybody doesn't like constantly there are these, oh, it's the end of MoviePass. It's like, why is there not an article somewhere saying, hey, this is cool, I like it while it lasts? It's all such doom and gloom. And it's like they're, and again, other than AMC originally, and now they're happy with it, why would you be against it? Who the hell thinks this is a bad idea? I don't get it.
They're trying to kneecap it or something.
Yeah, you would, wouldn't you?
Like that thing that happened in that other movie you saw this week.
Indeed.
Or recently.
Kneecapping, indeed. Yeah, I also saw Tonya.
Robot.
iRobot. Yeah, I would rather watch iTonya again. And it, which is not exactly high praise. I like the movie. Uh-oh. I like the movie. It's good. Margot Robbie does a really good job. Allison Janney is excellent as her mom. Horrible character. Not saying her mom is a horrible person, but the character is a horrible, horrible person. My God. Hideous. It goes back to what you said about Lost in Space. You know, when there are no likable people in a show or in a movie, it's kind of hard to stay with it. There's nobody likable in this. Nobody likable in this. And they try to make, and that's been one of some of the criticism of the movie, not as a movie, but just the fact that they try to make Tonya put her in the victim role. And because that's, and they portray that's how she has thought of herself, but they kind of push it a little too much to me. And it's just, no, she wasn't a victim. She may have felt that way. And I really didn't appreciate the movie kind of pushing that agenda, even though it's really kind of more on the subtle side. She wasn't the victim. And it's like, yeah, okay, maybe the system was set up where they were much more concerned about the image, or at least as concerned about the image as about the skill. And that's definitely true. And it was definitely held against her from her background that she's kind of a redneck, you know, and that's unfortunate. But she could also have worked to be a little bit less of a jerk.
Yeah.
Because she was a total jerk. And I'm not talking about the movie. I'm talking about her. So it makes it kind of hard to root for the character when you know the character isn't really a cool person. And even aside from the whole thing, is if she had foreknowledge of, oh, let's go kneecap that chick. That's aside from the point. I mean, whether she did or didn't, at this point doesn't matter. She's the kind of person who would have done it. And she did authorize some things that were going to try to not physically harm her, but get inside her head, which is way beyond what sportsmanship is about. She's not a good sportsman or woman or person at all. And she never was. And she's just a very unlikable person. And it makes it hard to want to like the movie. It's very well done. It's worth watching because Margot Robbie is really good. The ice skating sequences were really well done. I like the way they did that to mix in the action and make it work. Again, Allison Janney is like off the freaking charts excellent as a character that you would hate to know in real life. You would run from this person if you saw her coming.
And she did win the Oscar.
And she did win the Oscar for it, deservedly so. But It's a movie to watch knowing that you're not going to feel really good after you've seen it. So is that the kind of movie you want to watch? I mean, that's it. It's well done, but it's not that enjoyable.
To me, it's like Titanic. I know I was around when this happened. Not with them or anything, but I had CNN and they wouldn't shut up about it. You know, here's two ice skaters that you've never heard of before because right. you don't follow ice skating, but here's what they did. And you go, ooh, well, that's not good. Mm-hmm. Is there another story that happened today?
Right.
And apparently there wasn't, because this story didn't go away for
months.
Ever.
It's
still basically here.
Yeah, because here's this movie about it, and it's decades later. Yeah, there are no likable people in this film. None. And it's, I don't know, there might be a waitress random. That's okay. But other than that, yeah, it's just full of, and that's not the point. It's not like a Coen Brothers movie where they're intentionally a bunch of unlikable, weird people, or a Tarantino flick. It's not that kind of thing at all. It's just, God, these people are crappy people. I'm so glad I don't have to know any of them, because what a train wreck. Wow. What a train wreck they were.
Well, let's move on to a movie that you liked. You liked Kingsman, right?
Yeah, I liked Kingsman. That was a fun movie.
It's a little bit over the top, I think, at some points. But, I mean, it's an entertaining film for what it's supposed to be. The second one probably was a little bit, it was less than the first one. But I just think sometimes they try to be way over the top with stuff.
No, it's way over the top. I mean, and that was intentional. And yeah, I think they did go too far. But, it was a fun movie.
Well, the reason I brought it up is Taron Egerton, he who played the lead in Kingsman, has gotten another role. He's going to be playing Elton John in the movie Rocket Man.
Yeah, I can see him playing the glasses, he looks a lot like Elton John. Elton John, anyway.
Yeah, I can see it too.
And whether he can sing doesn't matter. As long as he doesn't have good diction, he's got it spot on as far as Elton John is.
Wow.
Wow.
So has this taken the place of the Freddie Mercury project, which has seemingly disappeared? You know anything about what's going on with that?
I heard that they finished filming it and it's in post-production.
Well, that's good news. That's awesome news, but it's like, just seemed to have gone off the radar.
Yeah, it disappeared for a while. Yeah. I suspect we will be hearing about it again soon when it pops up on Netflix, bypassing all the things.
Yeah, probably. There's 700 production.
Who's playing Freddie Mercury?
Oh, you would have to ask that.
You did ask that. He's such a SOB.
Is the person singing the parts?
No.
Okay.
The guy, and he looks spot on. He's Rami Malek from Mr. Robot. Oh. The TV series. I'm guessing not the Styx video. Although that would be weird. It looks like it's still in post-production. Supposed to hit... Supposed to hit theaters Christmas 2018. So that's something to look forward to. It's going to go up against a Star Wars movie, just to further kill it off. Anyway, I have pretty much run out of stuff for us to do this week.
That's very sad.
Unless you guys, I have a quote, but we're ending on the quote. So you guys have anything else you want to throw in?
I could talk about my favorite TV show of all times if you want, because it's in the agenda.
I wasn't sure.
But I don't have to.
No, you're going to. You brought it up.
Because I don't really have one. Because
the greatest TV program of all time.
This week. This week. I will say that depending on my mood, I could easily go with the show that the Huxtable that Lee
Cosby show?
That Lee went with Mad Men, but I will not go with Mad Men because it's really not my favorite of all time, although it's probably, depending on the week we talk about, it's in the top five. I would go with the original Twilight Zone, which is a little different, obviously, from the usual thing because it's an anthology series. But it had some of the funniest parts you've ever seen on TV. Not that often, but they had some comedic episodes. Mainly there was the Twilight Zone twist, which was, oh, you don't expect to see it happen, and then it happens. And the best example of that is not in a Twilight Zone episode. It's in a movie, the original Planet of the Apes, because Rod Serling wrote the screenplay. And it has the super cool twist at the end where, oh, my God, he was on this place all the time. It's because I'm not going to give a spoiler alert for a movie that came out in 1968. So, but just some of the best TV ever was on the Twilight Zone. The episode To Serve Man, which was one of the ones I just stuck with me because I'm older than you guys, and these were on when I was a kid, and I was watching these in their first incarnation towards the end of the run. To Serve Man, aliens come, and they're going to help Earth, and because Earth is in a crisis, and they're taking us all away to live on their planet, and oh, thank God, this is great. And they're teaching them all about all their technology and all the wonderful things we can learn from these aliens, which are really weird, creepy-looking, giant, domed, 7-foot-tall people, because Jack Cassidy played one of them, the guy who played Lurch in The Addams Family. And one of the guys looks at this book called To Serve Man. It's like, oh, see how nice they are. This is all about taking care of us. And then the very last line is, or basically the last line is, oh, my God, it's a cookbook. yeah, that's a great episode. So basically they're taking us away as cattle, and we didn't realize it until the very end. Time Enough at Last with Burgess Meredith, who is in a ton of Twilight Zone episodes. And you guys are nodding, right? And he's this bank clerk, and he gets in trouble because he's always reading instead of doing his job, and he's going down to the vault just to catch a few minutes on a break so he won't be hassled while he's reading. And boom, the big one goes off. The country, at least the country, is destroyed. Since he's in the vault, he survives, and he comes out, and he's heartbroken because everything is gone. Then he realizes, but wait, no one's going to hassle me. I have time to read. And then he finds out that he's broken his glasses. Can't read. You know, and the show is full of things like that. And it's just, I mean, there's a creepy episode called The Invaders, which is Agnes Moorehead and basically nobody else. And she's this old woman who's trapped. Well, she's stuck alone in her house, and there are these little tiny invaders. They come in this tiny spaceship, and it sounds really goofy. And looking at, I watched it just like last year again, and the effects were not great because it's a TV budget in the late 50s, early 60s. They didn't have a lot of money, but they did a pretty good job with it. And so she's being terrorized by these little tiny aliens. They're like maybe an inch tall, but you know, they've got ray guns and stuff, so they don't kill her, but they really harm her, and she's battling against them, and it turns out, at the very end, you see the ship that she's finally destroyed, and there's the emblem, the United States of America. It's like, she was the alien the whole time. Mm-hmm. And all of these shows are like that. Obviously, there are some that aren't great, but for the most part, they're terrific shows, and there are some that are just so amazingly emotional about people saving other people's lives and sacrificing themselves. And Rod Serling basically created this series because the censors wouldn't let him do what he wanted to do. He was an extremely successful playwright, and he did some great shows on CBS in the past, but they wouldn't let him directly address important issues at the time, like racism and why it's not nice to be a racist bastard. So he would couch these lessons within the framework of fantasy and science fiction, A Twilight Zone. And it's just an amazingly good show. Had tremendous authors. Richard Matheson wrote a lot of the episodes. Certainly himself wrote a lot. Just the music is, the theme song is incredible. Bernard Herrmann's like one of the best musical composers ever, wrote the score. It's just an incredible, incredible show. And they've tried to reboot it at least twice. And they've been...
A third time is coming. Who was it? Not Key, it was either Key or Peele is trying to bring it back.
Oh, that's right. And that I'm...
That might be pretty good.
Exactly. That might work. Because in the past, it's been okay. But, man, there's so much talent. So much talent involved in the original. This might work. This might be able to pull off. So that's something to look forward to. But man, The Twilight Zone was just a fantastic show of the time. And well, here we go. TV Guide ranked it as the fifth greatest show of all time. So four of their choices are wrong.
Anyway, you know, and there's some Key and Peele skits that actually seem like they're Twilight Zone snippets.
Oh, I mean, there are still, that show is still referenced. I mean, it's such a big part of a pop lot. Culture. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the twist. They did the twist. Rod certainly was writing the twist long before probably Shyamalan's dad was a twinkle in his dad's eye, practically. So, yeah. It's just, it's an awesome, and the main thing that makes it so good is the writing. I mean, because when the episodes worked, which they usually did, I mean, it's because the scripts were just fantastic. And Serling was the curator of all of it. So he was responsible for it one way or the other, whether he wrote the script or not. So just an absolutely awesome show.
There's a man on the wing.
Yes. Yeah. And some of the stars that you would see, it's like Robert Redford was in a couple episodes. I mean, there's some big, big stars that turned out to be huge stars later that, that's where they were. They were in the Twilight Zone initially. Jack Klugman, I think, is in like 50 now. He's on 50, but he's like in 5 or 6 episodes. And he's awesome. He's awesome in that show. So just a terrific, terrific show.
I'll agree.
Circle gets the square.
See? I'm bringing that back again, damn it. Whether it wants to come back or not. Kicking and screaming.
Key and Peele. They should host it. That would be awesome.
I'll agree.
That would be awesome.
That would be,
awesome. It would be amazing.
You know, and if anybody hasn't seen Key and Peele, I mean, they should definitely do that. I mean,
speaking of great TV shows, yeah.
Yeah. There's the one where they're being sold off as slaves and they're getting mad because nobody wants to buy them.
Oh, my God. That's awful.
That's just weird.
Oh, it's awful, which is the whole point.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. We've actually, you know, with as much as I said before the show that we don't have a whole lot of stuff this week, we've run long.
Of course.
That's okay. So I'm going to wrap up the show with our movie quote of the week, which does not come from anyone particularly famous. It actually comes from my wife, but it's going to make sense. She said this week, "I'm tired of movies that keep milking sequels for money, like Fast and the Furious. By now, they should be The Slow and Exhausted." You know what? I'm going to use that in the show this week, and I'm going to end with that.
That's awesome.
So, until next week, go watch a movie that we haven't seen. Otherwise, you know, we'll watch it for you and tell you how horrible it was.
Or great.
Or something like that. I don't know. We'll see you next week.
Captain, we're losing power in the warp engines.
I think we should be leaving now.
I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife.
And on that unusually harmonious bombshell, it is time to end.
I am very disappointed!
Man, we have a weird job.
It's shameful, but it's a living.
And like that, he's gone.
Darn, that's the end.